Okay, and staying with music, next month marks, believe it or not, 50 years since David Bowie released his first hit single, Space Oddity. So I'm joined in studio now by two self-confessed Bowie fanatics, musician Camille O'Sullivan and 2FM broadcaster Dave Fanning. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Delighted to be here.
Camille, do you remember how you discovered David Bowie?
Yeah, I was very lucky. My sister had good taste in music, 5 years older than me, and I was in a little bedroom next door with a timber wall. She was playing this really strange album, Ashes to Ashes, and then Ziggy Stardust. And I just remember I was like a child and I had a tear and I had this, you know, kind of instant reaction to it. So after that, I was just stealing the tape recorder all the time and playing it. And one of her first gifts, like my mum gave me a Gershwin record for my first musical present. My sister gave me John, I'm Only Dancing. So that was the start.
And a 7-inch vinyl of John, I'm Only Dancing.
And I still have it. And he was, I mean, I've been starstruck over the years, but nobody has matched Bowie. I mean, there was probably a teenage absolute crush of thinking, you know, I want to marry that guy. But I just adored him. I thought he was the most magical thing ever. And just, you know, actually Space Oddity, I remember being in the kitchen and just feeling like I was transported into some cinematic kind of, I felt like I was on a journey with that guy. I didn't know what. And that was in a village somewhere in Cork, you know.
That's it, isn't it? I think for so many people, it was more than music. It was that this guy beamed into your life all of a sudden and kind of changed everything.
Very emotional, feelings of you couldn't even explain it at that age, you know, and still to this age, even listening back recently to that new CD that they brought out of like Space Oddity, which is just kind of done acoustically, it still has that effect. And he just knew how to, I don't know what it was, he knew how to bring something out of yourself. And if you were a shy person or, you know, if you wanted to express yourself, he had a facet because he was so chameleon-like himself. And the lovely thing, I didn't really know the order of his music at all. It was only till I went to the V&A in Melbourne that I went, oh, that's what came first. So to me, it was just 20 different David Bowies that I was in love with.
You were hit by all this at the same time. Dave, do you remember getting into Bowie? The big moment a lot of people talk about, isn't it, is Starman on Top of the Pops in 1972.
Yeah, but that was later than what it was. I mean, like he was in bands like the King Bees and the Conrads and the Lower Third and all that. I knew none of that. That was around the time of the Beatles and all the rest. Oddly enough, he released an album on June the 1st, 1967, called David Bowie, which isn't really very good, to be perfectly honest. But the weird thing about it is, it was the exact same day as the start of The Summer of Love and as the day that Sgt. Pepper's was released, the same day. And so nobody knew much about him.
He was casting around for the first few years, really, trying to find
casting around for a lot of years. In fact, there's a recording in RTE somewhere on a TV programme from about 66 or so. But I mean, the first I heard of him was Space Oddity. So that's the anniversary you're talking about. That was the very first. But the weird thing about it is I look upon that album that came from that called Space Oddity as really his first one. And like I know it sounds like I only like the first ones, but the first, second and third albums are just the best ever. Space Oddity is really good. It's a bit like a kind of a young
hippie kind of.
It is hippie. It is very hippie. And it's also the recording is not exactly sophisticated, but the songs like Signet Committee, Letter to Hermione, you know, Memory of a Free Festival, or the one about the old woman stealing from the supermarket, God knows I'm good. Really
it's
great
fantastic
song.
Fantastic Voyage off that one too.
No, Fantastic Voyage
later on. That's
Diamond Dogs direction.
So the thing about though Space Oddity was he had that hit, and there was Space Oddity the album, which didn't really set the world on fire.
Yeah.
And then he kind of
that's
really
100% true. It's a bit like Thin Lizzy. When Thin Lizzy had a bunch of albums, they came out with the boys with Whiskey in the Jar. It's going to be huge. The next two albums did nothing.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, the boys.
What were the two albums after?
Well,
Space
now the thing is, honestly, the Space Oddity is a great album, but the next album,
Hunky Dory, was it? Or no.
The one in the middle.
The Man Who Sold the World.
The Man Who Sold the World is the one in the middle, and that's a kind of a very heavy dystopian depression kind of thing.
And this is where Bowie, as we know him, really for the next 10 years, was invented as
well. The two different Bowies, if you like, the brilliant kind of soft songwriter from the first album. In some ways of the hippie as you call it and then that one there, but the best album then came out, which was the next one, which is Hunky Dory to me. That was, so we were like, all my friends were absolute Bowie fanatics when he finally conquered the world, which by the way Hunky Dory didn't, and conquered the world was Ziggy Stardust. And when Ziggy Stardust came out, Hunky Dory sold more in the next 3 months than it had in the previous 2 years.
And the extraordinary thing is he was knocking out an album about every 6 months at this stage, and all classics.
Yeah,
like
he's got a lot of albums. He's got about 25 albums altogether, I think, you know, which is quite a lot.
So, speaking of Hunky Dory, let's have a little listen to Life on Mars.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on.
There it is, Life on Mars. Dave, based on the chord sequence of My Way, isn't it? Because Bowie is a bit of a crooner there.
Bowie's a bit of a stealer as well. He magpied right, left and centre, as did Bob Dylan, as did everybody else. There's no harm in that. He also was cut and paste stuff. I know it sounds ridiculous, but he used to get like loads of stuff, throw them down, and then suddenly he'd have like verses
explained
and songs.
So much.
Yeah, and like the same token.
And then we all put a load of meaning on it.
And that's the way it should be, even though it sounds ridiculous. Yeah.
So in terms of, we don't want to get too musery or anything, but Dave, just to put his whole career in context, because a lot of younger people probably, Bowie suddenly reappeared a couple of years ago. The 70s then, a hugely successful decade for him artistically. He wasn't always a massive artist
in the 70s. He kind of was, really, because when he started doing other things and was always one step ahead of everybody else. Used the word chameleon there a minute ago, and that's what it is. And he changed with the Plastic Soul of Young Americans. Then one of his best albums is one that he himself can't remember because he was so out of it on coke in LA. And I would put them in my second favourite album, which is Station to Station.
Station.
And then there's other ones. And then he went to get rid of it all by going to Berlin for the 3 Berlin albums. And he invented the electronica for a lot of people and all that kind of brilliant 70s. Yeah. To be honest, some of the stuff...
So between the age of about early 20s and early 30s, he did all that.
Yeah, he did. But you're looking at it as though, like, don't forget the Beatles broke up and not one of them was 30. You know, all Bob Dylan's best albums to me are before he's 30. So
that's what I'm saying. I think it's quite a common thing.
But the
thing,
funny thing is that his biggest selling stuff was the early 80s, which is Less Dance and all that was, didn't really do an awful lot for me. But after that, some of his albums were dodgy enough. But in particular, between 1993 and 2003, he released about 5 or 6 albums, all one-word titles. And I'm telling you, even Bowie aficionados don't really know those albums that well. He kind of lost it a bit.
Yeah, Camille, it's hard to stay with him all the time, isn't it? He does have his ups and downs.
He does. I mean, the thing, I found him just so influential. I think what got me, and I think this is really interesting, like between music, fashion, and what he, you know, this was a left of centre kind of guy who looked at the people who live on the outskirts and the strangeness and, you know, sexuality and mysticism, and he made it mainstream. And it was kind of, I saw a picture of him going up on we were doing a gig up in Aberdeen, actually, of Bowie music, and I saw a picture of him and Mick Ronson, who's such an incredible rock guitarist, and they're in their glam rock. And I just thought, these people must have looked like they came from outer space. Yeah. And it's kind of the last of the generation. I can't...
And I think Bowie drove it all, in fairness. Oh, Mick Ronson was a fairly normal guy from Hull, who was a rocker.
Made him dress up in this stuff.
Ziggy Stardust is one of my favourite albums too, because I was confused between, is he Ziggy or is he not Ziggy? And he kind of wrote the script then to his own rock stardom. Like, he kind of created a character and everybody went with it. And that magical moment in Hammersmith when he said, this is the last night we'll ever...
It's all over.
And
the
band
last show,
didn't even know it.
It's the last show we'll ever do. And they're still bitter about it.
Don't forget to go with Ziggy. The funny thing about it is that Ziggy Stardust was one album, and then the next album was Ziggy Stardust again in America. He called it Aladdin Sane. It was the same thing.
Tell us about the festival in Aberdeen.
Oh, that was great fun. Well, we were just asked to do an evening of his work, and so we just got a group of different people like Paul Noonan, Duke Special, Catherine Williams, and Cathal Coughlan, and just put together. And the hardest thing is like taking those songs because they're so well known. So you just don't do a tribute. You got to make it have some kind of other thing that makes the audience connect to it. And it was actually in a venue he had performed in. So it's I said back to the audience, I said, who was here in 1972? Yeah. And a good, 50% of them answered back. It was very emotional
kind
of response.
And Gillan sang some David Bowie songs as well, I believe. I'd love to have seen that.
I mean, I've heard him sing around the house, and I said, oh, come on, would you do this? And
he was in a band in college in Cork called Sons of Mr. Green Green.
No, you're thinking of Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy. Yeah, well, Cillian, I should have asked Cillian too, but Aidan, I asked him to do China Girl and Ziggy Stardust, and we sat together and we got Ziggy Stardust, we put it down to really slowing it down, so Ziggy played guitar, so that was really cool. Mm-hmm. China Girl was great, he did brilliantly. The only thing was the first hook of the thing, somebody played a wrong chord, so poor Aidan, because you know he's not a singer, and I'm like going, oh my God, is he going to get this? And so instead of coming out like do 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 do, it sounded more like the Birdie song do 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 do.
So I had to, that's where they got the Birdie song when you think about it, just that opening riff of China Girl.
Yeah, yeah. We joked about that all night then, you know.
Now, Dave, I always kind of, you know, you think when you're younger, I'd love to meet David Bowie. And then as you get on, you go, you know what? It's probably a good thing I didn't meet David Bowie. I'm sure he would have been a disappointment. You've met David Bowie several times.
I have, yeah. Yeah. Interviewed him a bunch of times. He's great. I mean, the first time was just before he did Last Spider Tour at Slane, and that was a terrible gig. I thought, awful. And there was a lot of people around him in this hotel in London. But the next times in the 90s in New York and London again, he was fantastic. Completely and absolutely 100% relaxed. In the studio, he'd kind of put down the headphones and come in and talk for 2 hours in front of a camera or whatever and go back. And
quite a normal bloke underneath it all.
Well, he likes to drop names. He loves to drop names that you've never heard of too. Like Harry Parch or the legendary Stardust Cowboy and that. Yeah. Although he did base Ziggy Stardust on the legendary Stardust Cowboy and Iggy Pop. That's where he got the name from, the two. Whatever. But he's great. He really is very interesting. And he is like somebody
He rang your house once looking for you, didn't he?
He didn't ring my house. I was living, I was married and living away from my house. I stayed at home until I was very old, by the way. And I was kind of...
Have you moved out at this stage?
I had moved out at this stage when I was working on Channel 4 doing a programme, and the guy from Channel 4 came over to Ireland, stayed in my house. His name was Richard Fell, lovely guy. And I was in the outside toilet of my mother's house having gone up to visit my mother, and my brother comes out and knocks on the door and says, David Bowie, the guy on the phone says he's David Bowie. Said, yeah, right, okay, it's Richard. Tell him I'll ring him back. You know, there was no mobile phones in the early 90s. He came out again. No, he says he's David Bowie. He said, oh, yeah, okay, fair enough, okay. So I went in, and the minute I heard, I realised it was David Bowie. It was very embarrassing, all right, that I had kept him waiting on the phone.
What did he want? Anyway,
yeah, I'll tell you what he wanted. It's really weird. He was playing a gig, believe it or not, a small kind of gig at the Baggot in Dublin, of all places. And he wanted not to put any ads in papers that he was doing this gig. He wanted it to be kind of, you know, organic, from the ground kind of thing. So if I vaguely mentioned on the radio that night, because he knew that's what I did, because I'd met him a few times, that if I vaguely mentioned on the radio that night that there's a gig happening that you really would be stupid not to go to it, I'm not going to say what it is kind of thing. And of course there was a queue around the block anyway, they didn't need me.
This was Tin Machine, the ill-advised rock band, was it?
Well, that's a long story really. I'm not so sure if it's that ill-advised, but anyway, I interviewed him in Tin Machine too, when he tried to be one of four people, a bit like kind of Jack White with the Raconteurs. You're David Bowie, it's not going to work. Glad I've asked the bass player and the guitarist and the drummer a question, but now David, here's my 20 questions.
A lot of people have obviously having their Bowie memories and comments. Tom says Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars is Bowie's best album ever, in my humble view. And you know what, I think everybody would not only argue for different albums, but I think at different points in your life as well. Do you not think, Camille, different parts of the canon seem more relevant?
Absolutely, and they always come, you know. I think when he passed away, I remember I was in Soho at the time gigging in London, and my sister rang me and there was no reaction, and I thought, wait a minute, this was the guy I was, you know, mad about, and I've always been mad about. And then I sat in a cafe an hour or two later and saw a grown man with he had headphones on, crying in front of me, and people were just crying in the street. And it was just, that was the first time I saw Facebook and Twitter as being such a nice thing, because it was people collectively sharing their memories and the grief. And I just felt this person helped me become, you know, to believe in many things in my life. You know, I couldn't believe he was gone, because I felt that was somebody, you know, that would be there forever, and because I'd grown up with him. And another nice thing somebody said was, weren't we so lucky that we were alive when he created this music? So I couldn't say that, but like I love the Beatles and I love John Lennon and all the rest, but it was Bowie that kind of shaped many things. Oh, yeah. About, like, there's a thing he says he was quite shy himself as a performer and didn't always like performing, but to become a character allowed him to become something else. And he says, there's facets to us that we'll never know. And in a way, I want the music to help people to find those parts of themselves that they find hard to express.
Yeah,
and that,
and of course,
to me,
you
as a singer, I found really...
Yeah, but then it went too far.
He
went to LA as Ziggy Stardust and he blew it completely on cocaine and went completely mad and had to leave that.
And that was Berlin then.
Nice cold Berlin after that, yeah.
And that's risk-taking too with that album Low. Like, when I heard that, I was going, this guy's getting away with everything. He's doing an album like that. Like, that's someone who...
Which, by the way,
is
very badly received when it came out first.
And you go back now and it's one of his classics.
Yeah.
Dave, you were saying about him being a name dropper. He shared his birthday with Elvis, and he told you a great story about it.
He shares his birthday with Elvis Presley, and I was saying to him, you share a birthday kind of with Elvis Presley, he was going to tell me a story about Elvis. I wish it said Jackson Pollock.
Here's a clip of you talking to him about the time he went to see Elvis Presley.
Oh, yeah. Did you actually go to an Elvis gig at Madison Square Gardens?
I did,
dressed
indeed.
As Ziggy?
Yes.
Come on, you sat in the front row.
That's absolutely right. And I got
That's
there.
A bit sad,
and
it?
I got there late. Well, of course, I was totally unknown in the States. This was pre any kind of knowledge about me in the States.
This would be a hunky dory 70 direction.
Yeah, a little bit later than that. I was pretty much there with the short cropped hair and the platform, the Kansai platform boots and all that. And I remember getting there late. And I got in there and started walking down the aisle and I wished the earth would just open and swallow me. I thought, why did I get here late? He didn't give me a ticket off or anything. I'm not sure. I know that he saw me coming in and but he didn't make any comment. It was an incredible thing to see.
So there, Bowie goes to see Elvis. Wouldn't you love to have seen that?
I just love that. He had humour.
More nice sex, Bowie and Slane. I remember it so well. He played a bunch of new stuff nobody knew. This was the ill-fated glass
pretty
program.
Awful.
And then he played Let's Dance and it was electric.
And I pretended to faint to get up the front to be lifted up.
I was desperate. I must use that the next time I want to do it.
I saw Bowie in HQ in Abbey Street and the thing that struck me was the gentleness and warmth of him. Relaxed in himself and happy to be there, Sam and Dunleary. Bowie's voice got better as he got older, says Artin Bray, and that a lot of people make an argument. Now, my family has a connection to life on Mars and Letter to Hermione.
The Martians.
No, you remember Letter to Hermione,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, Hermione
my uncle
Farthingale.
Was married to Hermione Farthingale's sister, and her family were quite well-to-do and looked down on Bowie, apparently. It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy
hair. That's right, the song's
that
about
was his
her,
great
yeah.
lost love, yeah. wasn't
yeah.
it, from
well,
his
letter,
young
I
years.
Back in,
Hermione Farthingale, the very strange thing about her is that he was going out with her around 69 direction, and she had to break it off because she had to go and make a movie called Song of Norway.
Yeah. And, that appears on the T-shirt.
If you look at the video for Where Are We Now, the last
when, this is when Bowie reappeared
in 2013
a year before he died.
I mean, the biggest thing, if you remember from 74 to 1980, John Lennon just went off the map.
Yeah.
And the biggest question was, where is John Lennon and what's he doing? And everybody wants to know about John Lennon.
Yeah.
It was the exact same thing when Bowie finished in 2004 after a dodgy gig in Germany where he was hit in the eye and all the rest of it and got sick and everything else that happened to him. And then in 2006 he did a quick charity thing. But basically for 10 years people were going, you know, where's David Bowie? What's he doing? So when he suddenly came back in 2013, Where Are We Now?
Yeah.
And by the way, on that T-shirt it says Song of Norway, which is, you know, goes right back 40 years. But the point is that, like, people were going, this is fantastic. And Where Are We Now is one of the greatest things ever done.
That.
Having said that, the album that came with it the next day, which was rave reviews everywhere, it's not that good.
But the Where Are We Now is haunting. It's just
Where Are We Now, for him to appear out of nowhere and seem to be referencing practically his whole career in his life.
Referencing his Berlin bits, but also like two older people looking back on their lives kind of thing. It was brilliant.
But there was something more extraordinary to come, really, which was that he essentially made an album around his own
death,
and almost curated his own passing for the fans, didn't he?
Yeah, and he knew the timing. Always had, like, I mean, Tony Visconti was saying that he said, you know, he left us with another gift, and just the way that he did it. Like,
but he brought an album out on the Friday, and on the Monday he died.
Yeah.
And the strange thing was the amount of reviews I saw over the weekend that never looked into the lyrics at all. Then when he died, you went, look, every song he's telling you, every single thing about
most
his death.
Obviously, people could look up the video for Lazarus, which is practically reenacting.
Do you know
his
what's
his
amazing?
Death,
like,
climbs into a press at the end. And closes the door.
But even though it was about his life, he was, you know, the zeitgeist of kind of catching the spirit of the times. He was always, whether he was barring or whatever, he seemed to just capture it. And in that moment, like, I remember that year with him and Leonard Cohen and then George Michael and Prince.
Yeah.
And then Where Are We Now was haunting me all the time because I felt like, not that that was few years before, but I was like, where are we now since these, you know, the world has changed so much? And he just knew how to, like Lazarus, really capture what we were going through, never mind in his own personal life.
Absolutely extraordinary. Let's listen to Lazarus for a minute. Definitely Camille knew how to create a moment, didn't he?
Absolutely, you know, and I mean, kind of not like he's Beckett on speed, but he definitely was a Renaissance man with a kind of an under... Like, every album is different. There's something he said, he was excited about being an artist, and that I think that was him all the time. Like, there's a man, not only did he understand music, like, there's an interview with Jeremy Paxman about the internet in 99, and Paxman is saying it's just a tool, and Bowie is way ahead of himself going, this thing is terrifying and exhilarating. Our lives are going to change, good and bad. And Paxman's kind of like putting him down. And then he created Bowie Bank, and, you know, he knew how to do his fan club and stuff like the guy.
So he essentially monetized himself and sold himself off just before the record industry collapsed.
But
basically,
I think it's amazing how, like, I mean, you are so lucky. I'm so envious of you having interviewed him, because I watched all those interviews after, so many when he passed away. And just how down to earth he seemed, you know, it's so lovely. And how could you have stayed like that? You know, and all the stories were so nice about him. I was so delighted, because when you have like somebody who loved that much, you want to hear the good stories.
It was an extraordinary outpouring, Dave, wasn't it?
Well, it really was, wasn't it? I mean, like, I know you're supposed to have expected it. Certainly people all around him expected it, but we didn't expect it. Mm. We certainly didn't expect to get an album on a Friday and he dies on a Monday. Mm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was like, I mean, the album itself, to be perfectly honest, has 7 tracks on it. 3 of them, I think, are very dodgy. One of them is great and the other 3 are fantastic. So, like, that's to me a good album. Yeah. 60% is good enough by me. But I do think the previous one, the one that came back with Ned the next day, was very overpraised.
The thing too, like, say, you know, when we did that kind of tribute night, we actually found how hard those songs are. Like, never mind you're trying to reinterpret them. Lazarus is hard. Like, that stuff is like, wherever he got those jazz musicians and what he did.
Yeah, he was working but with even experimental, like, jazz guys.
I thought, like, how would you ever do a new Space Oddity, or how would you do a new Ashes to Ashes, or There's No Game? Like, there's stuff you couldn't even make up. The guy just had a certain view on life and a certain strangeness. And it was just, you know, that turn to face the strange, like, in Changes, like he did.
And he really was always ahead of his time.
Yeah,
he really was, you know, for better or worse with some of them, but he really was.
Like, I don't know who could be a Bowie now. Like, and he said an interesting thing too. He said there was rock stars in the 70s, but then people got to understand the vocabulary of rock music and it became just groups of, like, girl band.
Well, the funny thing is, the record companies were kind of right about one thing. Like, in the early 70s, there was this thing called progressive music. Mm. And the problem with progressive music was it didn't progress. And David Bowie was bringing music into all different areas completely. So by the time punk came around, and he was kind of a big influence on punk, I remember the ads used to say, there was old wave, there was new wave, and there's David Bowie. And do you know something? That's a bit, whoa, but they're right.
Yeah.
One more. People have such great stories about kind of random David Bowie stories in Ireland, right? This is Eamon from Sandymount. Bowie did the most amazing gig in the factory in Barra Street in 1997. Yeah. He recorded there too, and he brought kids from the NPAS, the National Performing Arts School, singing class, in to watch him. Unfortunately, the kids didn't know him and the parents didn't believe them that they'd been brought in by David Bowie. What an amazingly kind man.
Brilliant.
Okay, so listen, they've been re-releasing old Bowie stuff and outtakes and demos and all kinds of stuff over the past year. So next Friday on June 28th, they'll be releasing the Mercury demos, and we're going to finish up with a song from that, and we would have to take, really, wouldn't we, Space Oddity. Camille and Dave, thank you very much. Here's David Bowie in Space Oddity.
Ground
control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.